The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandigedra Devalagam.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Ekam santam ekam panitam යදිදං සබ්බ සංඛාර සමතෝ සබ්බෝපධිපටි නිසග්ගෝ තණ්හක්ඛයෝ විරාගෝ නිරෝධෝ නිබ්බාණං. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the assembly of the venerable meditative monks, this is the 31st sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. In our attempt to understand some subtle characteristics of the middle path leading to Nibbana in our last sermon, we found some discourses like Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, Oghatarana Sutta, Vitakka Santhana Sutta, Magandhiya Sutta, Rathavinita Sutta and Alagadduvama Sutta particularly helpful. It became clear that the twin principle of pragmatism and relativity, underlying the norm of dependent arising, could be gleaned to a great extent from those discourses. We also found that the course of practice leading to Nibbana is not an accumulation or amassing, but a gradual process of attenuation or effacement, tending towards a realization of wildness free from notions of I and mine. It is for the purpose of emphasizing the twin principles of pragmatism and relativity that the Buddha compared the Dhamma to a raft in the Alagadupam Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya. In this series of sermons, we made allusions to this simile in brief on several occasions. But let us now try to examine this simile in more detail. In order to present the parable of the raft, the Buddha addressed the monks and made the following declaration.
Kulupamang bo bhikkave dhammang desissami nittharnathaya no ghanathaya.
Monks, I shall preach to you the Dhamma comparable to a raft for crossing over and not for grasping. With this introductory declaration, he goes on to relate the parable of the raft. Monks, suppose a man, in the course of a long journey, saw a great expanse of water, whose near shore was dangerous and fearful, and whose further shore was safe and free from fear. But there was no ferry boat or bridge going to the far shore. Then he thought, there is this great expanse of water, whose near shore is dangerous and fearful, and whose further shore is safe and free from fear. But there is no ferry boat or bridge going to the far shore. Suppose I collect grass, sticks, branches and leaves and bind them together into a raft and supported by the raft and making an effort with my hands and feet, I were to get safely across to the far shore. And then the man collected grass, sticks, branches and leaves and bound them together into a raft. And supported by the raft and making an effort with his hands and feet, he got safely across to the far shore. Then when he got safely across and had arrived at the far shore, he might think thus, this raft has been very helpful to me. Supported by it and making an effort with my hands and feet, I got safely across to the far shore. Suppose I were to hoist it on my head, or load it on my shoulder and then go wherever I want. Now, monks, what do you think? By doing so, would that man be doing what should be done with that raft?
No, Venerable Sir.
By doing what would that man be doing what should be done with the raft? Here, monks, when that man got across and had arrived at the far shore, he might think thus, this raft has been very helpful to me, since supported by it, and making an effort with my hands and feet, I got safely across to the far shore. Suppose I were to hold it on dry land, or set it adrift in the water, and then go wherever I want. Now it is by so doing that that man would be doing what should be done with the raft. Even so, monks, I have shown you how the Dhamma is similar to a raft, being for the purpose of crossing over, not for the purpose of grasping. And the Buddha concludes with the significant statement, Kulupamang vo bhikkave ajanantehi dhamma api vo pahatabba pageva dhamma. Monks, when you know the Dhamma to be similar to a raft, you should abandon even good states, how much more so bad states. So it seems, this raft simile has a very deep meaning. The building of the raft by the person wishing to cross symbolizes the pragmatic and relative values we highlighted in connection with the path of practice leading to Nibbana. The raft improvised with self-effort is not for grasping or carrying on one's shoulder. As we have already pointed out, with reference to such discourses like Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, apart from the purpose of crossing, there is nothing worth holding on to or grasping. Why so? Because the aim of this holy life or this path of practice is non-grasping instead of grasping, non-identification, atammayata, instead of identification, amyata, asetlessness, nirupadi, instead of assets, upadi. The importance attached to this simile is so much that the Buddha reminds the monks of it in the Mahatanha Sankhya Sutta also with the following allusion. Imam chetumhe bhikkave dittin evam parisuddhan evam pariyodatan අලියෙත කියලායෙත ධනායෙත මමායෙත අපින තුම් මේ භික්කවේ කුල්ලූපමං ධම්මං දේශිතං ආජානෙයත නිත්තරණත්තාය නෝගහනත්තාය නෝහේතං භන්ත ඉමං චේතුම් මේ භික්කවේ දිට්ඨින් එවං පරිසුද්ධං එවං පරියෝදාතං න අලියෙත න කේලායෙත න ධනායෙත නෙමමයේත අපිනතුම් මේ භික්කවේ කුල්ලූපමං ධම්මං දේශිතං ආජානෙයත නිත්තරණත්තාය නෝගහනත්තාය එවං භන්ති. Monks, purified and cleansed as this view is, if you adhere to it, cherish it, treasure it, and treat it as a possession, would you then understand the Dhamma that has been taught as similar to a raft, being for the purpose of crossing over and not for the purpose of grasping? No, Venerable Sir. Monks, purified and cleansed as this wave is, if you do not adhere to it, cherish it, treasure it, and treat it as a possession, would you then understand the Dhamma that has been taught as similar to a raft, being for the purpose of crossing over and not for the purpose of grasping? Yes, Venerable Sir. This is an illustration of the relative validity of the constituents of the path. Instead of an accumulation and an amazing, we have here a setting in motion of a sequence of psychological states mutually interconnected according to the law of relativity. As in the simile of the relay of chariots, what we have here is a progression by relative dependence. In this sequential progression, we see an illustration of the quality of leading onward, open-eyed, characteristic of this Dhamma. The term open-eyed has been variously interpreted, but we get a clue to its correct meaning in the Udaya Sutta of the Bodhyanga Samyutta in the Sanyutta Nikaya. Venerable Udai declares his attainment of the supramundane path in these words: Dhammo ca me bhante abhisamito, maggo ca me patiladdho, yo me bhavito bahulikato, tathatatha viharantam tathattaya upanishyati. The Dhamma has been well understood by me, Venerable Sir, and that path has been obtained, which, when developed and cultivated, will lead me onwards to such states as I go on dwelling in the appropriate way. The implication is that the Dhamma has the intrinsic quality of leading onward whoever is dwelling according to it, so that he attains states of distinction independent of another's intervention. A clearer illustration of this intrinsic quality can be found in the Chetana Karaniya Sutta, among the tenets of the Anguttara Nikaya. In that discourse, the Buddha describes how a long sequence of mental states is interconnected in a subtle way, according to the principle of relativity, leading onwards as far as final deliverance itself. The following section of that long discourse might suffice as an illustration of the mutual interconnection between the mental states in the list. Sīlavato bhikkave sīla sampannassa na cetanāya karaniyam avippatisāro me uppajjatūti dhammatā esā bhikkave yam sīlavato sīla sampannassa avippatisāro uppajjati avippatisārissa bhikkave na cetanāya karaniyam Pamujjam me uppajjatuti. Dhammata esa bhikkave yang avipatisarissa pamujjam jayati. Pamudisasa bhikkave na chetanaya karaniyam pitme uppajjatuti. Dhammata esa bhikkave yang pamudisasa piti uppajjati. To one who is virtuous, monks, who is endowed with virtue, there is no need for an act of will like, let remorselessness arise in me. It is in the nature of Dhamma, monks, that remorselessness arises in one who is virtuous, who is endowed with virtue. To one who is free from remorse, monks, there is no need for an act of will like, let gladness arise in me. It is in the nature of Dhamma, monks, that gladness arises in one who is free from remorse. To one who is glad, monks, there is no need for an act of will like, let joy arise in me. It is in the nature of Dhamma, monks, that joy arises in one who is glad. In this way, the Buddha outlines the entire course of training, leading up to knowledge and vision of deliverance, interlacing a long line of mental states in such a way as to seem an almost effortless flow. The profound utterance with which the Buddha sums up this discourse is itself a tribute to the quality of leading onward, open-eyed, in this Dhamma. Iti kho bhikkave dhammava dhamme abhisandenti dhammava dhamme paripurenti apara parangamana. Thus, monks, mere phenomena flow into other phenomena. Mere phenomena fulfill other phenomena in the process of going from the not beyond to the beyond. So then, in the last analysis, it is only a question of phenomena. There is no I or mine involved. That push, that impetus leading to Nibbana, it seems, is found ingrained in the Dhamma itself. Not only the term open-eye, all the six terms used to qualify the Dhamma are highly significant. They are also interconnected in meaning. That is why very often, in explaining one term, others are dragged in. Sometimes the questioner is concerned only about the meaning of the term Sandhitika. But the Buddha presents to him all the six qualities of the Dhamma. In discourses like Mahatanna Sankhya Sutta, the emphasis is on the term open-eyed, But there too, the Buddha brings in all the six terms because they are associated in sense. Let us now examine how these six epithets are associated in sense. The usual explanation of Svakkhata, well preached, is that the Dhamma has been preached by the Buddha, properly intoned, with perfect symmetry as to the letter and to the spirit, excellent in the beginning, excellent in the middle, and excellent in the end. But the true meaning of Svakkhata emerges when examined from the point of view of practice. The quality of being visible here and now, Sandhitika, that is not found in any ill-preached doctrine, Durakkhata Dhamma, is to be found in this well-preached Dhamma. Whereas an ill-preached doctrine only promises a goal to be attained in the next world, the well-preached Dhamma points to a goal attainable in this world itself. Therefore, we have to understand the full import of the epithet Svakkhata in relation to the next quality, Sandhittika, visible here and now. We have already dealt with this quality to some extent in connection with an episode about General Seer in an earlier sermon. Briefly stated, the meaning of the term Sandhittika is visible here and now, in this very life, as far as the results are concerned. The same idea is conveyed by the expression Ditteva Dhamma, often cited with reference to Nibbana in the standard phrase Ditteva Dhamme Sayang Abhinya Satchikattva, having realized by one's own higher knowledge in this very life. Whereas Samparayika stands for what comes after death, in another life, Sandhittika points to the attainability of results in this very life, here and now. The term Sandhittika can be related to the next epithet, Agalika. Since the results are attainable here and now, it does not involve an interval in time. It is, in other words, timeless, akalika. In our earlier sermons, we brought in as an illustration for this involvement with time the period of suspense after an examination these days, awaiting results. Nibbana examination, on the other hand, yields results then and there and produces the certificate immediately. So we see the quality visible here and now, implicating timelessness. Unfortunately, however, the term akalika also suffered by much commentarial jargon. Meanings totally foreign to the original sense came to be tagged on, so much so that it was taken to mean true for all times or eternal. The Samiddhi Sutta in the Devata Samyutta of the Samyutta Nikaya clarifies for us the original meaning of the term akalika. One day, Venerable Samiddhi had a bath at the hot springs in Tapodaram and was drying his body outside in the sun. A deity, seeing his handsome body, gave him an advice contrary to the spirit of the Dhamma. Bhunja bhikkhu manusuke kame ma sandhittikam hitva akalikam anudhavi. Enjoy, monk, human sensual pleasures. Do not abandon what is visible here and now and run after what takes time. Venerable Samiddhi made the challenge with the following explanatory reply. Nakvahang auso sandhittikam hitva kalikam anudhava. Kalikam chekvahang auso hitva sandhittikam anudhava. Kalikahi auso kamavutta bhagavata. Bhavdukha bhavupayasa. Adhinamo etha bhiyo. Sandhittiko ayam dhammo akaliko. Ehi pasiko. Opanaiko. Pachyatam veditabbo vinyohi. It is not the case, friend, that I abandon what is visible here and now in order to run after what involves time. On the contrary, I am abandoning what involves time to run after what is visible here and now. For the fortunate one has said that sensual pleasures are time-involving, fraught with much suffering, much despair. and that more dangers lurk in them. Visible here and now is this Dhamma, timeless, inviting one to come and see, leading one onwards to be realized personally by the wise. This explanation makes it clear that the two terms sanditika and akalika are allied in meaning. That is why sanditika is contrasted with kalika in the above dialogue. What comes after death is kalika, involving time. It may come or may not come. One cannot be certain about it. But of what is visible here and now, in this very life, one can be certain. There is no time gap. It is timeless. The epithet akalika is implicitly connected with the next epithet, ehipassiva. If the result can be seen here and now, without involving time, there is good reason for the challenge, come and see. If the result can be seen only in the next world, all one can say is, go and see. As a matter of fact, it is not the Buddha who says, come and see. It is the Dhamma itself that makes this challenge. That is why the term ehipassika is regarded as an epithet of the Dhamma. Dhamma itself invites the wise to come and see. Those who took up the challenge and tried in earnest have proved for themselves the realizable nature of the Dhamma, which is the justification for the last epithet, paccattaṃ veditabbo viññūhi, to be experienced by the wise, each one by oneself. The inviting nature of the Dhamma leads to personal experience, and that highlights the open-eyed quality of leading onwards. True to the statement, tatha tatha viharantam tatattaya upanishati, the Dhamma leads him onwards to appropriate states as he lives according to it. Sometimes the Buddha sums up the entire body of Dhamma. He has preached in terms of the 37 participative factors of enlightenment. Particularly in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, we find him addressing the mass in the following memorable words. Tasmātiha bhikkave yete maya dhamma bhinya desita tevo sadhukam ugghahetva āsevitabba bhavetabba bahulikātabba yathaidam brahmacharyam adhaniyam asya chirachyatika tadasya bhaujanahitāya bhaujana sukhāya lokānu kampāya atthāya hitāya sukhā devanusāna katamīcate bhikkave dhamma maya abhinya desita yevo sādhukaṁ ugghayetvā āsevitabbā bhāvetabbā bahulikātabbā yataidaṁ brahmacaryaṁ adhaniyaṁ asya chirattite tadasya bhaujana hitāya bhaujana sukhāya lokānu kampāya atthāya hitāya sukhāya devamanusāna siyatidaṁ cattāro satipatthāna chattaro sammapadhana, chattaro iddhipada, panchindriyan, panchabalan, satya bojjhanga, aryo, athangiko. Therefore, monks, whatever dhammas I have preached with higher knowledge, you should cultivate, develop and practice thoroughly, so that this holy life would last long and endure for a long time, thereby conducing to the well-being and happiness of many, out of compassion for the world, for the benefit, the well-being, and the happiness of God's in me. And what monks are those dhammas? I have preached with higher knowledge that you should cultivate, develop and practice thoroughly, so that this holy life would last long and endure for a long time, thereby conducing to the well-being and happiness of men, out of compassion for the world, for the benefit, the well-being and happiness of God's in men. They are the four foundations of mindfulness, four right endeavors, the four bases for success, the five faculties, the five powers, the seven factors of enlightenment, and the Noble Eightfold Path. This group of dhammas, collectively known as the 37 participative factors of enlightenment, illustrates the quality of leading onwards according to the twin principles of relativity and pragmatism. It is customary in the present age to define the Dhamma from an academic point of view as constituting a set of canonical texts. But here in this context, in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, at such a crucial juncture, at the final passing away, we find the Buddha defining the Dhamma from a practical point of view, laying emphasis on the practice. It is as if the Buddha is entrusting to the monks a toolkit before his departure. The 37 participative factors of enlightenment are comparable to a toolkit, or rather, an assemblage of seven toolkits. Each of these seven is well arranged with an inner consistency. Let us now examine them. First comes the four foundations of mindfulness. This group of dhammas deserves pride of place due to its fundamental importance. The term Satipatthana has been variously interpreted by scholars, some with reference to the term Patthana and others connecting it with Upatthana. It seems more natural to associate it with the word Patthana, foundation, as the basis for the practice. Upatthita Sati is a term for one who has mastered mindfulness based on the four foundations. As for instance in the aphorism, Upatthita Sati Sayang Dhammo, Nayang Dhammo Mutta Satis. This Dhamma is for one who is attended by mindfulness, not for one who has lost it. The four foundations themselves exhibit an orderly arrangement. The four are termed Kayanupassana, contemplation on the body, Vedanupassana, contemplation on feelings, Chittanupassana, contemplation on the mind, and Dhammanupassana, contemplation on mind objects. So here we have a basis for the exercise of mindfulness, beginning with a gross object, gradually leading on to subtle objects. It is easy enough to contemplate on the body. As one goes on setting up mindfulness on the body, one becomes more aware of feelings and makes them too the object of mindfulness. This gradual process need not be interpreted as so many cut and dried separate stages. There is a subtle, imperceptible interconnection between these four foundations themselves. To one who has practiced contemplation on the body, not only pleasant and unpleasant feelings, but also neither painful nor pleasant feeling, imperceptible to ordinary people, becomes an object for mindfulness. So also are the subtler distinctions between worldly samisa and unworldly niramisa feelings. As one progresses to chittanupassana, contemplation on the mind, one becomes aware of the color light system of the mind in response to feelings, the alternations between a lustful mind, saragam chittam, a hateful mind, sadosam chittam, and a deluded mind, samoham chittam, as well as their opposites. Further on in his practice, he becomes conversant with the wirings underlying this color light system of the mind, and the know-how necessary for controlling it. With Dhammanupassana, he is gaining the skill in avoiding and overcoming negative mental states and encouraging and stabilizing positive mental states. Let us now see whether there is any connection between the four foundations of mindfulness and the four right endeavors. For purposes of illustration, we may take up the subsection on the hindrances included under Dhammanupassana, contemplation on mind objects. There we read, Yathacha anuppannasa kamachandasa uppadu hoti tancha pajanati. Yathacha uppannasa kamachandasa pahanam hoti tancha pajanati. And he also understands how there comes to be the arising of unarisen sensual desire and how there comes to be the abandoning of arisen sensual desire. These two statements in the subsection on the hindrances could be related to the first two out of the four right endeavors. Anuppannanam papakanam akusalanam dhammanam anuppadaya chandam janeti vayamati viriyam arabhati cittam paggannati padam. Uppannanam papakanam akusalanam dhammanam pahanaya chandam janeti vayamati viriyam arabhati cittam paggannati padam. For the non-arising of unarisen, evil, unskillful mental states, he arouses a desire, makes an effort, puts forth energy, makes firm the mind and endeavors. For the abandoning of arisen, evil, unskillful mental states, he arouses a desire, makes an effort, puts forth energy, makes firm the mind and endeavors. The understanding of the hindrances is the precondition for this right endeavor. What we have in the Satipatthana Sutta is a statement to the effect that one comprehends pajanati, the way hindrances arise as well as the way they are abandoned. Right endeavor is already implicated. With mindfulness and full awareness, one sees what is happening. But that is not all. Right endeavor has to step in. Just as the first two right endeavors are relevant to the subsection on the hindrances, the next two right endeavors could be related to the following two statements in the subsection on the enlightenment factors in the Satipatthana Sutta. Yatha chanuppannasa sati sambandhangasya uppado hoti tancha pajanati. Yatha cha uppannasa sati sambandhangasya bhavana paripuri hoti tancha pajanati. And he also understands how there comes to be the arising of the unarisen mindfulness enlightenment factor and how the arisen mindfulness enlightenment factor comes to fulfillment by development. One can compare these two aspects of the Dhammanupassana section in the Satipatthana Sutta with the two right endeavors on the positive side. Anuppannanam kusalanam dhammanam uppadaya chandam janeti vāyamati viriyaṁ ārabhati cittam pagannāti padāti. Uppannānaṁ kusalānaṁ dhammānaṁ trithiyā asammosāya bhīyo bhāvāya vepullāya bhāvanāya paripūriyā chandam janeti vāyamati viriyaṁ ārabhati cittam pagannāti padāti. For the arising of unarisen skillful mental states, he arouses a desire, makes an effort, puts forth energy, makes firm the mind and endeavors. For the stability, non-remiss, increase, amplitude and fulfillment by development of arisen skillful mental states, he arouses a desire, makes an effort, puts forth energy, makes firm the mind and endeavor. This is the right endeavor regarding skillful mental states. Why we refer to this aspect in particular, is that there is at present a tendency among those who recommend Satipatthana meditation to overemphasize the role of attention. They seem to assert that bare attention or noticing is all that is needed. The reason for such an attitude is probably the attempt to specialize in Satipatthana in isolation, without reference to the rest of the 37 participative factors of enlightenment. These seven toolkits are interconnected. From the Satipatthana toolkit, the Sammapadana toolkit comes out as a matter of course. That is why bare attention is not the be-all and end-all of it. Proper attention is actually the basis for right endeavor. Even when a machine is out of order, there is a need for tightening or loosening somewhere. But first of all, one has to mindfully scan or scrutinize it. That is why there is no explicit reference to effort in the Satipatthana Sutta. But based on that scrutiny, the four right endeavors play their role in regard to unskillful and skillful mental states. So we see the close relationship between the four foundations of mindfulness and the four right endeavors. It is also interesting to examine the relationship between the four right endeavors and the four paths to success. We have already quoted a phrase that is commonly used with reference to all the four right endeavors, namely, Chandang Janeti, Vayamati, Viryang Arbhati, Chittang Pagganhati, Padhati. Arouses a desire, makes an effort, puts forth energy, makes firm the mind, and endeavor. Here we have a string of terms suggestive of striving, systematically arranged in an ascending order. Chandang Janeti refers to the interest or the desire to act. Vayamati suggests effort or exercise. Viryang Arbhati has to do with the initial application of energy. Chittam Pagannati stands for that firmness of resolve or grit. Padhati signifies the final all-out effort or endeavor. These terms more or less delineate various stages in a progressive effort. One who practices the four right endeavors in course of time specializes in one or the other of the four bases for success, Siddhipada. That is why the four bases for success are traceable to the four right endeavors. To illustrate the connection between the right endeavors and the four bases for success, let us take up a simile. Suppose there is a rock which we want to get out of our way. We wish to topple it over. Since our wishing it away is not enough, we put some kind of lever underneath it and see whether it responds to our wish. Even if the rock is unusually obstinate, we at least give our shoulders an exercise, vayamati, in preparation for the effort. Once we are ready, we heave slowly, slowly, Viryang Arbhati. But then it looks as if the rock is precariously balanced, threatening to roll back. So we grit our teeth and make firm resolve, Chittang Pagannati. Now comes the last decisive spurt. With one deep breath, well aware that it could be our last, if the rock had its own way, we push it away with all our might. It is this last, all-out endeavor that in the highest sense is called Sammapadhana, or right endeavor. In the context of the right endeavor for enlightenment, it is called Chaturanga Samannagata Virya, effort accompanied by four factors, which is worded as follows. Kamang tatocha naharucha adhichavasissatu sariri upasussatu mansa lohitang yantang purisathamene purisaviriene purisaparakyamene pattabbang natang apapunitva viryasa santhanang bhavisa. Verily let my skin, sinews and bones remain, and let the flesh and blood dry up in my body. But I will not relax my energy, so long as I have not attained. What can be attained by manly strength, by manly energy, by manly exertion? Though as an illustration, we took an ordinary worldly object, a rock. One can substitute for it the gigantic mass of suffering to make it meaningful in the context of the Dhamma. It is the formula for the toppling of this mass of suffering that is enshrined in the phrase Chandang Janeti, Vayamati, Viryang Arbhati, Chittam Pagganati, Padhati. Rouses a desire, makes an effort, puts forth energy, makes firm the mind and endeavors. The four bases for success, Iddhipada, namely Chanda, desire, Virya, energy, Chitta, mind, and Vimamsa, investigation, to a great extent are already implicit in the above formula. Clearly enough, Chandang Janeti represents Chanda Iddhipada. Vayamati and Viryangarabhati together stand for Virya Iddhipada. While Chittam Pagannati stands for the power of determination implied by Chitta Iddhipada. Apparently, investigation, Vimamsa as an Iddhipada, has no representative in the above formula. However, in the process of mindfully going over and over again through these stages in putting forth effort, one becomes an adept in the art of handling a situation. In fact, Vimamsa or investigation is Panya or wisdom in disguise. Even toppling a rock is not a simple task. One has to have the know-how in order to accomplish it. So then, all the four bases for success emerge from the four right endeavors. What is meant by Iddhipada? Since the word Iddhi is associated with psychic power, it is easy to mistake it as a base for psychic power. But the basic sense of Iddhi is success or proficiency. For instance, Samiddhi means prosperity. It is perhaps more appropriate to render it as a base for success. Because for the attainment of Nibbana, also the development of the Iddhipadas is recommended. Going by the illustration given above, we may say in general that for all mundane and supramundane accomplishments, the four bases hold good to some extent or other. In the Iddhipada Samyutta, these four bases for success are described as four ways to accomplish the task of attaining influx-free deliverance of the mind and deliverance by wisdom. With the experience gathered in the course of practicing the fourfold right endeavor, one comes to know one's strong point, where one's forte lies. One might recognize Chanda, desire or interest as one's strong point, and give it first place. In the case of the basis for success, it is said that even one would do as the others fall in line. According to the commentaries, Venerable Rattapala of the Buddha's time belonged to the Chanda category, and Venerable Mogharaja had Vimamsa as his forte, excelling in wisdom. Someone might get so interested in a particular course of action and get an intense desire and tell himself, somehow I must do it. To that wish, the others, energy, determination, and investigation become subservient. Another might discover that his true personality emerges in the thick of striving. So he would make energy the base for success in his quest for Nibbana. Yet another has his strong point, still determination. The other three fall in line with it. One who belongs to the wisdom category is never tired of investigation. He even literally leaves no stone unturned if he gets curious to see what lies underneath. The fact that there is a normative tendency for Iddhipadas to work in unison comes to light in the description of Iddhipada meditation in the Samyutta Nikaya. For instance, in regard to Chanda Iddhipada, we find the descriptive initial statement. Ida bhikkhave bhikkhu chanda samadhi padana sankhara samannagatam itipadam bhavati. Herein monks, a monk develops the base for success that is equipped with preparations for endeavor arising from desire concentration. Now what is this chanda samadhi or desire concentration? this strange type of concentration, not to be found in other contexts, is explained in the Chanda Sutta itself as follows. Chandam tye bhikkave bhikkhu nissaya labati samadhi labati cittasse ekaggatam ayam vuccati chanda samadhi. If by relying on desire monks, the monk gets concentration, gets one-pointedness of mind, this is called desire concentration. Due to sheer interest or desire, a monk might reach a steady state of mind, like some sort of concentration. With that as his basis, he applies himself to the four-right endeavors. So, anuppannanam, papakanam, akusalanam, dhammanam, anuppadaya chandam janiti vayamati, viriyam arbhati chittam pagganhati pada. Uppannanam, papakanam, akusalanam, dhammanam, pahanam, chandam janiti vayamati, viriyam arbhati chittam pagganhati pada. Anuppannanam, kusalanam, dhammanam, uppadaya Chandam janiti vayamati viriyam arbhati chittam pagannati pada. Uppannanam kusalanam dhammanam thitiya asammosaya dhiyo bhavaya vepullaya bhavanaya paribhuya. Chandam janiti vayamati viriyam arbhati chittam pagannati pada. For the non-arising of unarisen evil unskillful mental states, he arouses a desire, makes an effort, puts forth energy, makes firm the mind and endeavors. For the abandoning of arisen, evil, unskillful mental states, he arouses a desire, makes an effort, puts forth energy, makes firm the mind and endeavors. For the arising of unarisen, skillful mental states, he arouses a desire, makes an effort, puts forth energy, makes firm the mind and endeavor. For the stability, non-remiss, increase, amplitude and fulfillment by development of arisen skillful mental states, he arouses a desire, makes an effort, puts forth energy, makes firm the mind and endeavors. So here again the standard definition of the four right endeavors is given. The implication is that once the base for success is ready, the four right endeavors take off from it. The four bases for success are therefore so many ways of specializing in various aspects of striving, with a view to wielding the four right endeavors all the more effectively. All the constituents of right endeavor harmoniously fall in line with the four bases for success. Here then, we have a concept of four types of concentrations as basis for right endeavor. Chanda Samadhi, desire concentration. Virya Samadhi, energy concentration. Chitta Samadhi, mind concentration. And Vimamsa Samadhi, investigation concentration. Now, what is meant by Padhana Sankhara? Preparations for right endeavor. It refers to the practice of the four right endeavors with one or the other base as a solid foundation. Padhana is endeavor or all-out effort. Sankhara are those preparations directed towards it. Finally, the Buddha analyzes the long compound to highlight its constituents. Iti ayanca chando, ayanca chanda samadhi, imecha padhana sankhara, ayam vuccati bhikkhave chanda samadhi padhana sankhara samannagato idivada. Thus this desire and this desire concentration and these preparations for endeavor, this is called the base for success, that is equipped with preparations for endeavor arising from desire concentration. So we see how the four bases for success come out of the four right endeavors. The relation between the four bases for success and the next toolkit, the five faculties, Panchindriya, may not be so clear. But there is an implicit connection which might need some explanation. The five faculties here meant are faith, saddha, energy, virya, mindfulness, sati, concentration, samadhi, and wisdom, panna. The four bases for success provide the proper environment for the arising of the five faculties. The term indriya, faculty, has connotations of dominance and control. When one has specialized in the basis for success, it is possible to give predominance to certain mental states. Saddha or faith is chanda, desire or interest in disguise. It is in one who has faith and confidence that desire and interest arise. With keen interest in skillful mental states, one is impelled to take an initiative. The Buddha gives the following description of saddhindriya. Kathaca bhikkhave saddhindriyang dattabbang chatusu sotapattiyangesu. Where monks is the faculty of faith to be seen in the four factors of stream entry? The four factors of stream entry briefly stated are as follows. 1. Buddhe avicchappasadena samannagato. 2. Dhamme avicchappasadena samannagato. 3. Sanghe avicchappasadena samannagato. 4. Aryakantehi silehi samannagato. It is 1. He is endowed with confidence born of understanding in the Buddha. 2. He is endowed with confidence born of understanding in the Dhamma. 3. He is endowed with confidence born of understanding in the Sangha. 4. He is endowed with virtues dear to the noble ones. The stream winner has a deep faith in the Buddha, in the Dhamma and in the Sangha that is born of understanding. His virtue is also of a higher order, since it is well based on that faith. So in the definition of the faculty of faith, we have an echo of Chanda Iddhipad. It can also be inferred that Viriyindriya, the faculty of energy, also takes off from the energy base for success. We are told, Kattaca bhikkave Viriyindriyang dattabbang chatusu sammapadhanesu. And where amongst is the faculty of energy to be seen? In the four right endeavors. The faculty of energy is obviously nurtured by the four right endeavors and the four bases for success. The antecedents of satindriya, the faculty of mindfulness, may not be so obvious. But from the stage of satipatthana onwards, it has played its silent role impartially throughout, almost unseen. Here too, it stands in the middle of the group of leaders without taking sides. In fact, its role is the preserving of the balance of power between those who are on either side, the balancing of faculties. About the place of satindriya, the Buddha says, Kathaca bhikkhave satindriyang dattabbang chatusu satipatthanesu. And where amongst is the faculty of mindfulness to be seen? In the four foundations of mindfulness. It is the same four foundations now reinforced by greater experience in vigilance. Then comes the faculty of concentration, samadhindriya. We already had a glimpse of it at the Iddhipada stage as chanda samadhi, desire concentration, virya samadhi, energy concentration, chitta samadhi, mind concentration, and vimamsa samadhi, investigation concentration. But it was only a steadiness or stability that serves as a makeshift launching pad for concentrated effort. But here in this context, samadhindriya has a more refined sense. It is formally defined with reference to the four jhanic attainments. Kathaca bhikkhave samadhindriyang dattabbang chatusu jhanesu. And where amongst is the faculty of concentration to be seen? In the four absorptions. Sometimes, rather exceptionally, another definition is also given. Ito bhikkave aryasavako vasaggaramanam karitva labhati samadhin labhati chitta sekagata. Hearing monks, a noble disciple, gains concentration, gains one-pointedness of mind, having made release its object. However, it is by the development of the basis for success that concentration emerges as a full-fledged faculty. Lastly, there is the faculty of wisdom, Panindri. Though it has some relation to Vimamsa or investigation as a base for success, it is defined directly with reference to the Four Noble Truths. Kathita bhikkhave panindriyam dattabbam chatusu ariya sacchesu. And where monks is the faculty of wisdom to be seen? In the Four Noble Truths. Nevertheless, in the Four Noble Truths too, we see some parallelism with the illustration for Iddhipadas we picked up. Suffering, its arising, its cessation, and the path to its cessation is comparable to our reactions to our encounter with that stumbling block, the rock. In the context of insight, Panindriya is defined in terms of the knowledge of rise and fall, Udyatthagamini Panya. The sharpness of faculties may vary from person to person, according to their samsaric background. The Buddha, who could see this difference between persons, Puggalave Mattata, was able to tame them easily. As we have already mentioned, mindfulness is in the middle of this group of faculties. Being the mainstay of the entire Satipatthana practice, it renders a vigilant service in silence here too, as the arbiter in the struggle for power between the two factions on either side. Now that they have the dominance, Saddha, faith, and Panya, wisdom, dragged to either side, wishing to go their own way, mindfulness has to strike a balance between them. Likewise, virya, energy, and samadhi, concentration, left to themselves, tend to become extravagant, and mindfulness has to caution them to be moderate. So in this toolkit of faculties, sati is the spanner for tightening or loosening, for relaxing or gripping. Alternatively, one can discern another orderly arrangement among these five faculties. In the Indriya Samyutta, Venerable Sariputta extols the wonderful inner coherence between these faculties before the Buddha in the following words. Saddhasahi bhante arya savakas etang patikankham yang aradhaviyo viharissati akusalanan dhammanam pahanaya kusalanan dhammanam upasampadaya thamava dalha parakkamo anikhita dhuro kusalesu dhammesu yang is bhante viryam tadasya viryindya. Saddhasahi bhante arya savakas aradhviryas etang patikankham yang satima bhavisati paramena satine pakkena samannagat chirakatampi chirabhasitampi sarita anusarita yahis bhante sati tadasya satindriya. Saddhasahi bhante arya savakas aradhviryas upattita satino etang patikankham yang bosaggarammanam karitva labhisati samadhin labhisati cittasya ekaggatam yoisa bhante samadhi tadasya samadhindra. Saddhasahi bhante arya savakasya aradhviryasya upattita satino samahita cittasya etang patikankham yang evam pajanisati anumataggo kho samsaro Pubbhākotina panyāyati avijjāni varnānaṁ saptānaṁ tannā saṁyojanānaṁ sandhāvataṁ saṁsaratāṁ avijjāyatteva tamokāyas asesa virāga nirodhā santaṁ yetaṁ padaṁ panitaṁ yetaṁ padaṁ yadidaṁ sabba saṅkhāra samto sabbūpa dhipatini saggo tannakyo virāgo nirodho nibbāna. Yaisa bhante panya tadasya panyate. It could indeed be expected, Venerable Sir, of a noble disciple who has faith that he will dwell with the energy put forth for the abandoning of unskillful states and the arising of skillful states, that he will be steady, resolute in exertion, not shirking the burden of fulfilling skillful states. That energy of his, Venerable Sir, is his faculty of energy. It could indeed be expected, Venerable Sir, of that noble disciple who has faith and who has put forth energy, that he will be mindful, endowed with supreme adeptness in mindfulness. One who remembers and recollects what was done and said even long ago. That mindfulness of his, Venerable Sir, is his faculty of mindfulness. It could indeed be expected, Venerable Sir, of that noble disciple who has faith, who has put forth energy, and who is attended by mindfulness, that he will gain concentration, will gain one-pointedness of mind, having made release the object. That concentration of his, Venerable Sir, is his faculty of concentration. It could indeed be expected, Venerable Sir, of that noble disciple who has faith, who has put forth energy, who is attended by mindfulness, and whose mind is concentrated, that he will understand thus. This samsara is without a conceivable beginning. A first point is not discernible of beings roaming and wandering, hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving. But the remainderless fading away and cessation of ignorance, the mass of darkness, this is the peaceful state, this is the excellent state, that is the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. That wisdom of his, Venerable Sir, is his faculty of wisdom.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible, free of charge, to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.